lots and lots and lots of late night conversations with John, with yourself, and with a whole cast of characters. There's a lot to go through with things like that. But I like Monet as well. I used to have very inexpensive museum reproductions of the Lily Pond pictures. So we're kind of similar in that way too, I guess.
There was one story. I went to one of the major military contractors with John, and we decided we're gonna go with his car and his van, and oh yeah, and all of a sudden, at first we got a flat tire, and I knew my truck was similar, so I said let's go on the flat tire another 2 miles. And we're gonna go out of the highway. And we were lucky, it was only half a mile. And then we went to the gas station. And nice people in somewhere in upstate New York, they were trying to help us. Finally, we got in the middle of the night, we've got somebody who said, I'm gonna take this tire and I'm gonna bring you a complete set. So he did. And then we didn't have a wrench to properly lock the nuts on it. But somehow we did it, and then we're driving and we got the vibration. When we stop, we find out that we have only one nut on it, and then we had to call for the tow truck. But John was positive, and he said, no problem, we're going to do it German way. And everything must be good. So they took us. It was still in the middle of the night, and we had to be in the morning picking up some generators and some other stuff. And finally we did it. But then when we came back to New York, he said that his car needs a major repair. Now, That was scary. The funny thing was when the police officer came and he saw that tire, the whole assembly holding on one nut only. And he said, how lucky you are, guys. So, yes, that was a funny story. Dr. Ray.
Very good, Wes. You know, all's well that ends well, if you will. Would it be all right, Wes, if I move on to the list? We'll get back to you. It's just I don't want to leave anyone behind.
Definitely.
Okay, next up on the list is KD2FIU, George.
Thank you, Roy. And I got to know John only working on this frequency, on this repeater. Started to hear him on the TechNet on Sunday nights. When I started listening about 3 years ago, and when he carried in the mailbag, what impressed me was is that he was able to represent the questions with an enthusiasm as though he had spoken to the person. And it wasn't a mail, or it wasn't a written correspondence. I feel like he contained the voice of the enthusiasm of the person who was asking the question. About a year later, started having conversation QSOs on Saturday nights on this repeater. And I found him to be very inclusive in maintaining the rotation of who joined in the conversation. And that was important because I was new to VHF and repeater conversation. Let me drop.
Hello,
participant in that conversation, that CUSO, he had the ability to blend the topics that each one represented with clarification, hoping that the rotation would continue and that conversation would go and blend for everybody to come together. And to me, it was a short time. That was 2 years ago that I was actually speaking and talking, and Wes was part of it. Wes was part of it before I was. I found John to be a person who was able to blend the participants' topics, be an excellent negotiator, and clarify. Great job. I think it was just excellent the way he did that. KD2FIU.
AC2GS. I agree with you entirely, George. He was enthusiastic about the questions in the mailbag, and he was enthusiastic about the answers in the mailbag. He was never bored, and he always sounded that way, and he always felt that way, because John was not phony about his feelings. So and also, you know, as you said, he was very inclusive in round-robin QSOs. There are guys out there, unfortunately, who tend to kind of narrow the conversation to the person that interests them the most. And that was never evident in John. He made a point, if there was someone left out, to kind of push them into the center spotlight for a time as well. And, you know, that's another thing that kind of made those conversations special for me, and I'm sure for you and many other people.
I think the ability to clarify, sometimes people are talking and in that round table and forget. Not just by mentioning the call sign and the name of the other individual who's there, but by clarifying the topic, reminding us all that we're part of that little party going on.
Well, yes, I agree, George. It takes a certain talent to be able to maintain a conversation. I mean, you sort of need interesting people to kind of feed it, but if you just kind of sit there and let it take care of itself, then it usually kind of peters out into nothingness. And John knew how to organize a bit of a round robin, and you know, as I think I started this whole thing, it was his habit to come on down around 9:30. He would sit in front of his desk. He would throw out his call sign. Very often he would call out to Wesley, to Andy, to Todd, and people would come back, and he would start this exchange going, and he would start it until the wee hours. I mean, I was involved in some that went as far as 3:30 in the morning, but I believe that Dick, K2RIW, had conversations with John that lasted into the dawn.
On multiple occasions, and I'll be telling you about that when you come around to my name.
Oh, that's an important talent in this hobby. I mean, yeah, sure, some people are just in it for the RF frequency and the Ohm's law and the Smith charts and such, but, you know, it's nice to have a guy who can have a nice conversation with people.
Interesting is here that John was my English teacher, and he was helping me a lot to communicate with Dick. Dick was actually my science mentor at first. You know, talking about Dick, we had a few incredible guys on this repeater. I don't remember one single time when Dick said no. He took the time to explain something. And when John went on the radio, that's how the 3 o'clock in the morning conversation started. Dr. Roy.
Well, yeah, I mean, as I said before, I mean, John, although John would occasionally suggest that he had other things that he had to get done early in the morning, a lot of times he would kind of change his mind after he said that, and we talked for another hour. So, yeah, John was the enabler for us all. Getting back to George, anything else you would like to say at this time, George?
Yes, my loving respects to all of his family members. And, a great guy. Just a great guy to talk with, only a couple of years, but impressed me. I learned.
Donna just said that her father impressed her since she was a child.
And I'm glad that we have the opportunity to kind of exchange that bit of information between each other, and I'm particularly happy that we had a chance to share it with Donna because we never talked to Donna because I don't think she's a ham, and radio was John's thing, not Donna's. So I'm glad we had an opportunity to share this aspect of John's life with her.
Don't know if you got it, KD2CBV.
Again, Todd, what didn't I get?
I don't know if you heard me check in earlier.
He's definitely on the list. And by the way, the last guy on your list, Roy, I think is Andy, W2CDL. Just before Andy, Eric, KE2EJ, was signing in, and he got covered up. So add KE2EJ in front of Andy, W2CDL. Back to you, Roy.
CCZ would like to be put on the list also.
Well, getting back to Todd, you are on the list. It's not a very long list, but we all have a lot of things to say nice about John. But I assure you, Todd, we will get to you. Take it from me. We will get to you, Todd. I assume that you're done for the time being, George, right?
Thanks, Roy, but I haven't left the room. And KD2FIU will be here and listening, and we'll be jumping in. Thank you, Roy.
Very good. I'm not saying that this is a one-shot type of a deal. When we get to the bottom of the list, we'll ask for further check-ins, and if we get them or not, we'll just start at the top of the list again, and we'll run down the list until you all are too tired to hear from me. So next on my list is Warren, AC2KY.
Good evening. As Richie said, John was the voice of reason on the repeater. I could always discuss many aspects of electrical engineering and construction. He was one of the few people that knew exactly what I was talking about, especially when I would come home kind of bewildered and frustrated from a problem I couldn't solve. Let me let it drop. We talked about larger transformers, multiple and paralleling switchgear, 2 through 7 megawatt gen sets, critical care systems for healthcare facilities. John was a very stable individual and just a pleasure to listen to. I will very much miss him. I found out the hard way by listening to the net earlier on in the week. I believe it was the Astronomy Net, and I called out to Richie K2KNB, and he told me about this net, and you guys are really performing a great tribute. Letting me let it drop one more time. John, like myself, we had quite a few things in common as far as family dynamics, dogs and kids, and he was just a pleasure to talk to. We talked about family quite a bit. And that's about all I have to say regards to the family, and I'll be on the side listening. So back to you, Dr. Roy.
Thank you very much, Warren. And after everyone in the community heard about John's passing, I was listening to different nets, UHF nets, VHF nets, were offering a moment of silence and memory. He had touched them all. Again, very generous with his time, especially friends. If he found out that a friend had anything to do with any net, any place in the metropolitan area, he would take the time and trouble to check in and give them support. So, you know, news of his passing has gone both on the UHF and VH bands. So for all I know, they're on the HF bands, and I miss them. So he touched a lot of people. Thank you, Warren. And I guess, Dick, K2RIW, you're up next. And I really would appreciate if you could just put in a little bit about the real gun and the seismograph and such, because I totally missed that era of his experimenting.
I'll try. Let's see now. One of the things I wanted to mention is that, am I putting out the right amount of power? I think I am. I met Donna for the first time when Rich, K2KNB, and Jerry, WB2ZEX, and I, last Tuesday, we went to John's house. We actually saw his laboratory face-to-face. Not just the pictures that you see at QSZ.com, and it's very extensive. And we're involved in helping to handle that estate sale. There are hams who can make some very good use of that equipment. John and I had a number of things in common. Both born 1940. We've had somewhat similar childhoods. One of the other things that, changing subject, that John was very helpful on TechNet is that I was too busy looking at QRZ.com, just getting people's names and keeping the list of people who checked in. And I had my hands full that way. I'm not that good at keeping that many balls in the air. What John was doing for me is not only handling the mailbag, but he was also on his two other computers keeping track of the EchoLink chat room and IRLP. When people were trying to sign into the TechNet and were having trouble, John, by way of his computers, was watching that and bringing it to our attention. Let me drop this. So therefore, we weren't locking people out who were trying to get into the TechNet, and I'm going to really miss that function on the TechNet. Whoever we get, I hope, can acquire that. They're most human beings, if you're going to make a telephone call to them, you don't do it beyond approximately 8 o'clock at night. Otherwise, you insult them because they're getting ready for bed, they're watching the news, or whatever. There's two human beings on planet Earth that I know of, Barry N2MB and John KC2WGB. You could call them on the telephone at 2 o'clock in the morning. On a couple of occasions, when it was somewhat appropriate, I've done that with both of those guys. On a couple of occasions, I called them at 11 o'clock at night, and we got talking about various things that were not quite appropriate for over-the-air medical or whatever, somewhat personal things. and we talked until 3 o'clock in the morning. I remember on one occasion I told John, you know, we really probably ought to cut down this particular telephone conversation because the sun is rising at my QTH. I'm a little bit further east of you. The sun rises a couple of minutes earlier. We made a joke about that. Let me drop it. But Barry and 2MB and John, you could call them at 2 o'clock in the morning because they sometimes kept we sometimes keep some pretty late hours. Some of the other things I wanted to tell you about, let's see. One of the great things about that dog, Cookie, is that because John was a diabetic and occasionally had a medical problem, on at least one or two occasions, the dog, Cookie, recognized that something was wrong and alerted other people about that, and it was very helpful to John. John was very unhappy about both of the loss of his wife and the loss of Cookie, and he was looking forward to getting another dog exactly like Cookie. And I was very unhappy about the fact that that did not take place, that that deal fell through. The dog that he was in the process of buying, somebody, I guess was a good friend of the person. I think the dog was coming from Kentucky, if I remember correctly, and somebody bought the dog out from under John, and he didn't get that one. Let's see, there's quite a few other things I'll be thinking of as time goes on. But what an unusual person, without a doubt. Very, very helpful. Back to you, Roy. AC2GS, K2RAW.
AC2GS. Yes, I kind of learned from John. I'm sitting in front of EchoLink myself, and actually Lou and Nick both used EchoLink to transmit tonight. So great minds, I guess, think alike, or I just stole the idea from John. Yeah, I heard about the dog, and it was such a shame when it passed away, and I kind of followed the adventures. He was looking so much forward to getting one the exact same breed because he really loved Cookie and wanted the Cookie Mark II, I guess. And yeah, it's a shame.
Donna is saying that she actually found.
I was looking like crazy on the internet. There's a lot of dogs that need to be adopted. I tried to find a Swiss Mountain dog, that's where Cookie was, and I had found one on a website, and it was a puppy, looked just like Cookie. But there is such, there's so much paperwork that you have to fill out. It takes so long to adopt a dog nowadays.
Yes.
It's impossible, and they don't get right back to you, to let you know what's going on. It's terrible. It really is terrible. The dog needs to be adopted.
Right.
It should be quick.
Right. And to extend the story.
I wasn't aware of the difficulty of adoption. I assumed it depended upon the agency involved. I kind of anecdotally heard stories of people going to the ASPCA and signing a couple of things and them handing the dog over, but I would assume that that would be a completely different type of setup.
Actually, I took him to two different places on Staten Island. It was ASPCA. The only dogs that they had, believe it or not, were pit bulls.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. Back to you, Dr. Roy.
I guess, unfortunately, pit bulls have a very bad reputation lately, so I guess a lot of them are going unloved and uncared for, and so they're locked up at the ASPCA. Dick, any other reminiscences that you'd like to add?
Eddie just seen anything dog comment.
Yeah, we'll pass it over to Todd in a second with another dog comment. I'm looking down my list now of the things that I wanted to mention. Cookie, let's see, EchoLink, 1940, calling at 2 o'clock in the morning. Southworth was the name of the book that I had recommended to John on microwave stuff. He was fascinated by the fact that a transmission line could have no center conductor in the case of a piece of waveguide. And how in the world did that work? The books on that subject do a rather poor job of that. And John and I, on some of those conversations at 2 o'clock in the morning, were discussing that. He was describing to me, let me drop it. He was describing to me the procedures he was going through to try to make a very sensitive seismograph, something that can detect the seismic waves, the rail gun. I've never researched that particular subject, so I had to rely on John to give me the specifics as to how that worked and how he was pursuing it. Occasionally, I could make some suggestions as to how Faraday's law works and why you do or don't pick up signals under certain conditions on a coil of wire. One of the things that John and I both drastically appreciated as a science machine is a Wimshurst machine. I own a Wimshurst machine, described it to John, and he went and bought one immediately. And so in the pictures, in one of the pictures at QSZ.com, you will see this large 8-inch or 10-inch diameter pair of circular discs with a handle on the bottom that when you turn it, it makes, believe it or not, 150 or 200 kilovolt voltages at very low current. And you can draw a spark across those two probes that it sometimes can go as much as 4 or 5 inches. So John was having great fun explaining to some of his students that would come visit as to what that was doing. So in the early days of electronics, believe it or not, they were able to make static electricity before they were able to make real electricity. It was Mr. Volta who came along and invented the Volta battery. But before that, it was all static electricity. It was the first thing they saw, and lightning. So had a lot of fun with that. John, let me drop it. John found out once that I needed an unusual capacitor. He had it in his stock. He had a pair of them and mailed it to me. He also mailed me a camera. All I had to do was mildly mention the fact that I could use a such and such, and it would appear in the mail. Quite a character. Over to you, Roy. K2RIW.
AC2GX. You know, I've always suspected, both of you and John, that you guys don't sleep, that somehow you're able to function, you know, 23 hours and, say, 50 minutes a day on without sleeping. And because I can't figure out when you guys sleep, because, you know, those long conversations I used to hear, and it's not like you slept through the rest of the day. I also got a Wimshurst machine, and I remember talking to John about it. He asked me if I had an 8 or a 9-inch diameter, and I boasted that I had a 12-inch diameter, and he boasted back that his was 12 inches as well. So they were all the same size. But, yes, he loved that Wimshurst machine. I love mine. It's a kick.
One of the well-kept secrets, Roy, is that the way you adjust the two probes, first of all, the Wimshurst machine, sometimes it starts with the right-hand side being positive, and sometimes it'll start with the right-hand side being negative, so to speak. It's not completely polarity determined until it gets started, and then it will stick with that polarity. There's a very specific way you can aim the two probes where you can get a much bigger spark out of a much longer distance. You don't set the probes symmetrical. You want to aim the positive probe toward the negative probe, toward the middle of the negative probe suspension wire, so to speak, and you'll get a much bigger spark. Where if you put it the other way around, if you aim the negative probe toward the middle of the positive probe suspension rod, then you get a lot of sizzling action and no real spark. So there's a couple of crazy secrets about those things, about keeping them dry enough, getting full voltage out of them, cleaning the disc just right to get rid of the dust. And so there's a real art and science to using those machines. And when you use the Volta, what is it now? There's a way of making a snowstorm in a small plastic container when you use that machine. They can do some very interesting experiments. Over to you, Roy, K2RIW.
That's very interesting, but when have you never been very interesting in your information? I haven't really tried the asymmetrical electrodes. I tend to make them symmetrical, and I lengthen them and see how far away and how big a spark I can get. I've correlated it rather closely with humidity. The winter dry days, I can get a much longer spark than the humid summer days.
That's definitely true. And I started building a pair of plastic discs that are bigger in diameter, I think around 18 inches. The maximum voltage you can get is a function of disc diameter and the spacing of the metal spaces, the metal pickup devices that are on the plastic discs. You've also got to be careful about the fact that there's a certain number of joules of stored energy in those Leyden jars that you don't want to exceed, that if you do a worst-case condition of a spark between the two hands, it could send the human being into fibrillation. So when you go to higher voltages with larger diameters, you got to be careful how you use it. It can become a dangerous machine. But it's kind of interesting in the history of electrical engineering that electrostatic machines came first before batteries. Over to you, and John and I had considerable discussion about that. One of those phone calls that went until like 4 or 5 in the morning was when we were discussing all the funny things you can do with a Windhorse machine. Let me drop for a second. And people get confused as to thinking that I only have to sleep 2 hours per night. No, I have to sleep a good 7 hours per night. But I do it at different times. In other words, this particular week, maybe I'm a night person. And next week, I'm a day person. If I've got to switch my hours around if I've got to meet a doctor's or a dentist's appointment, if you know what I mean. When I have to interface with the real people that live normal lives. As a retired person, you can adjust your hours if you want to. In your case, as a physician, my guess is there are times when you got to be on duty at 6 o'clock in the morning and you got to adjust your sleeping hours accordingly. Over to you, Roy, K2RIW.
AC2GS. Well, back in the old days, it was far worse than that. Interns used to, before they changed the laws, we're expected to work 36-hour shifts sometimes, and that requires really screwing around with your time sense. I wish I could easily kind of shift from one to the other. I still recall when I was a resident and I would go into the emergency room shift, which very often would be in the middle of the night. They'd be 12 o'clock to 8 o'clock in the morning. I was downright depressed by the whole thing. One of the happiest moments was when I rotated out of the emergency room because I just didn't like working 12 midnight to 8 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, it's a talent to be able to shift your time sense so easily. I do it with great difficulty, and thankfully these days I'm not really required to do that much. Gone are those bad old days of 36-hour rotation.
Roy, do you know why the 12 at night till 8 in the morning is called the graveyard shift? Do you know how it got that name?
I don't recall, Dick. I think you mentioned this once before, but I would love to hear it.
Well, we're getting off subject now about John, but we'll go into that later. But saved by the bell and graveyard shift, those words are all related to what used to happen in graveyards at night to make sure you didn't bury a person that was just having a narcoleptic phony death, so to speak. Oh, back to you, Roy. So in the case of, we had these discussions with John on a couple of occasions. We discussed all kinds of cabbages and kings. There were times when these phone calls that are way beyond what you could discuss over the air lasted until the sun rose. There was a number of those that John and I had. Over to you, Roy, K2RIW.
Very good. I've heard kind of stories. Usually they take place around the Victorian age where people had figured out mechanical sound devices to plant inside coffins in case the person woke up and wanted to inform everyone that he was still alive. Because you know, it happens to this day, unfortunately. It's rare, thankfully, but there are times where people are somewhat prematurely declared dead.
And apparently they used to have a piece of tubing that went from the casket all the way up to the surface with a string connected to a bell. And if the person woke up because he was really mistakenly declared dead because of narcolepsy, he could ring the bell, and the person sitting outside on the graveyard shift right after the person was first buried would recognize the fact that the bell was ringing and the person was alive. And that's one of the apparent stories for Saved by the Bell. W. Roy.
Yeah, I've heard that. I always wondered how apocryphal it might be, because that's a lot of mechanical devices and a lot of strings and tubes and such, and I don't know. Victorian age has always struck me as kind of slapdash at times. So I would be interested to know the percentages of people who kind of paid extra for that device.
Yeah, here I really don't know, Roy. And we ought to get back to the subject and try to remember one or two of the other crazy subjects that John and I discussed. Lots of discussions about how a radio wave really propagates. John was running quite a few experiments with directional couplers, the spectrum analyzer, the vector network analyzer, and building various devices in which, also with his slotted line, he was making measurements to try to find out how radio waves really behaved and how he could explain it to the students that would sometime visit him. The books that try to explain radio do a less than perfect job, and he and I have often discussed the fact that there are better ways of doing it. He, on a number of occasions, tried to talk me into writing a book on the subject, and whether or not I could really make a book with enough unique information compared to what already exists is an interesting subject. And I've got a couple of problems that I've got to solve at my house before I get into that book writing. Over to you, Roy, K2LIW.
Well, John wanted you to write a book. Eric wanted you to create a video. I could understand. I would love to see a YouTube of yours. You know, Wesley does YouTubes as well, and I would love to see what you would come up with.
I have to become more skilled with digital cameras and have to become a lot more skilled when it comes to manipulating photograph-like things on a computer. I'm very low on skill of doing manipulation of things like Photoshop, so to speak. There's a lot of learning curve there. I claim to be smart on radio. I'm not very smart when it comes to computers. I really need a lot of help on that one. Over to you, Roy, K2LIW.
You know, we all need support crew. I mean, no one can do it all by themselves. And, it's one of those many things that might have been. Some of the things, I mean, you watch a lot of the YouTubes, Veritas and Versalium. I forget exactly the Australian guy with no kind of accent that does Veritasium. There's a lot of great YouTubes out there. I mean, some of them are very high production values. Some are far less production values, but they have good information. And, you know, it's always good to have another source of information.
Yeah, I'm glad you've discovered those Veritasium videos. All of a sudden, I'm having trouble remembering his name. Very skilled guy. Yes, he comes from Australia, but he spent some of his life in Canada. And he has a rather light amount of accent, so to speak. And I think he has produced something like 100 separate science-like videos. Some of them are extremely good, particularly the one that discusses nuclear radiation and the relationship to cigarette smoking. Over to you, Roy, KQLIW.
Yes, I remember that one. I think that was almost a year ago, and he's still putting out new stuff, and it's a pleasure to listen to him. I mean, there's some guys that their mannerisms kind of overwhelm the material. There's a few physics guys who move their hands so much during their presentation, I think they're about to fly.
And I think his name is Derek Mueller, Mueller, and he's very good at explaining things. He's got an excellent way of putting himself in somebody else's shoes, so he explains it in a way that you stand a good chance of understanding. He doesn't want to just display a whole lot of erudition, if you know what I mean. John was also very good at that. When he understood something, he could explain it to people in ways that they understood it, without being offended by the method of presentation. AC2GS, K2LIW.
And he always preferred conciseness. You know, brevity is the soul of wit, and he really couldn't abide too much flowery words.
Dick, if you're interested, I was always worried that things that you do for us, like a great teacher, are just things of the past, just a few minutes after the show is over. And I was thinking how nice it would be to preserve it for others. It is 30-something years that you're doing it for free. And every word is a help to somebody else. I happen to be not bad in video editing, and there's a number of programs free of charge. You could have it, easy to operate, and that might be also a fun for you. So if you're interested, I can volunteer to help you out. Attention.
Yeah, that's an interesting offer, Wes, and I'm going to consider it. When it comes to recording my words, they've already been recorded, as you know, by way of that website, amateurradio.tangovictor, by Mike, KC2NJI. So the last 10 and a half years of the TechNet are recorded. But just words are not enough. Man is a visual animal, and we need visual presentations to be added to an awful lot of that. You're absolutely right. Back to you, Roy, K2LIW.
Okay, very good. Dick, I'm sure you have a lot of other things to tell us, and I look forward to that. Would it be all right if I move on to the list and we'll get back to you the next time?
I've gone through my immediate list right now, but there'll be others. Bye-bye for now. Thank you.
Before you go, Dick, to Exian, just give me a call. You have my number anytime you feel like. I'm going to help you out as much as I can. And it is important for me, and I believe that it would be important for many big guys to have a visual as well as your voice on YouTube. Waiting for it. Dr. Ray.
Yeah, I used the wrong words. I'm not going away. Don't worry. I'm just saying it's time to go on to the next person on your list who I think is Todd. So you got it, Roy.
Yes, Dick, you were quite right. Next up is Todd, KD2CBV. So tell us your memories, Todd.
KD2CBV. Well, the thing about sleep was interesting, and I did want to say something, but didn't want to just key up. You could do 4 hours split shifts, is what they call this. It goes about 2 months like that, 4 hours, then get up, do whatever, and then about 12 hours later, you do another 4 hours. After about 2 months, you wind up that's when you start to deteriorate. The other thing was the dog comment about adopting a dog. It doesn't necessarily take a long time to adopt a dog unless you're going for a specific breed and you want a specific puppy, which is what John wanted, which is why it took so long, because you have to set it up beforehand, and then when the breeder knows they have, then they go through the process of gestation and so on. So that was what took John such a long time and so on. Now, that wasn't what I was going to say, and the other thing is I apologize for being misunderstood. I never heard an acknowledgement of my call sign. I just wanted to get that in. So is it time for the what I had to say, or is it something else at the moment?
Yes, Todd, it's time for you to say what you have to say.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. As Roy knows, I have a little bit of an issue, so this is not exactly going to be easy. Not for what a lot of you are thinking of. John was extremely important to me as a person, as a friend. Ironically, I didn't meet him on Limark, which is kind of funny. Whenever I got a phone call from him, you know, I drop everything, you know, just that's it. You know, or I would call him and so on. I'm going to try to draw a dividing line because, as many of you know, John was a private person. And so I feel that the conversations, obviously, were not for public dissemination in any way, shape, or form. I may briefly leak into that a little, but on the public front, which a lot of you have heard numerous times. Obviously, it's been covered, well-read, well-versed. You know, of course, John and I had a fair number of arguments, actually. I won a couple, he won a couple. A couple of them, maybe neither one won, but in other cases, both of us won. Most of that you didn't hear on the air, so, but, you know, he was one of the very few people who, with a sentence, could sucker me into a three-hour conversation. Drop. And, as many of you know, we would cover a variety of subjects, you know, has been stated before already. And, you know, there was, I don't know how to put it, but it was a click, I guess, both ways. If I had been around, say, 30 years earlier, there's also some commonality in that John and I would have worked professionally together. Or if he was, you know, 30 years later, I mean, some of the things we did had some commonalities in it where we would have, like I said, the time frame had been different. We would have worked together, some of which we can't talk about. And, you know, so we understood each other to a really, really great, great degree. And it was, you know, it was amazing. And then the thing I got a kick out of it, as many of you have stated, oh, I learned a lot from John. I did too. And I'm not going to sit here and say no. And I always got a kick out of it when I give him something and he was unaware of it, and then he learned something, and, you know, it was kind of nice, because it's like, you know, he's feeding you, and you're feeding him, and I always thought that was cool. There's a number of things, obviously, you know, regarding Cookie and so on. We've talked about his wife. We've talked about a number of things. You know, back and forth. And as friends do, we both lean on each other for various reasons. Drop. And in one sense, I feel very, very privileged to have seen that side of him. on the other side of the coin, you know, the public side seeing that as well. Truly, you know, I look at the whole fabric of everything. I don't look at, and only the good. No. Because you got to take the good and the bad to make up the entire quilt, if you will. And to me, you know, having someone like that in your life and having, you know, your worlds crossed is probably one of the best things that, you know, you can say about life. I will say this about John. If you want to figure out what is a successful life, is it money, fame, fortune? Hey, quite frankly, I mean, you know, how many people show up at a funeral or something like that? When I think about it, what is a successful life? How many people have you influenced in a positive way? Whether it be someone you met for 15 minutes and that was it, and you had a short conversation. Whether it's someone you spent hours and hours and hours. Horse racing. He suckered me into a 3-hour conversation one night. Look, John, I got to get up early. Yeah, I have to get up early, too. And then, what do you know about horse racing? What? About what? And with my hearing, but I couldn't make it out. The third time, I got it. And we were on the air for another 3 hours, even though we both had to get up soon. And, you know, it's like, okay. But the mark of a successful life. How many people have you influenced in a positive way? Look at everybody who's here. John was highly successful. I mean, beyond belief.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
I'm not sure where I exactly hit that. What I said was I could tell you lots of stories. The mark of a successful life is how many people are here? How many people did he touch in a positive way? So he was highly, highly successful. I mean, I could tell you a whole bunch of stories, the time he did this, the time he did that, all on the air, and you probably all heard it because you've all been listening. So I don't know if really stories are what you want to hear, but, you know, discussing Roman Bath, the 30 Years' War, the Civil War, I mean, it doesn't matter. Ships. And, you know, all kinds of things. And if I ever got anything from him, you know, it was usually something that was, like, really cool. And, of course, I sent him stuff, and you guys know all that. So there's not much I can say that you don't know in the public. And the thing is, I'm better just for him being around. And hopefully he was a little better for having me around. So I guess that's pretty much about it. I'm not trying to be maudlin because it really is a celebration drop. It really is a celebration of being associated with a fine individual and the fact that they wanted to be associated with me. And, hopefully the trend will continue with others. And, you know, I guess that's what life is all about. And, you know, like I said, John was highly successful. And now I'm starting to ramble, so I guess at this point I will hand it over to Dr. Roy, KD2, CBB.
AC2GS. Well said, Todd. Let's move on to the next person on the list, Michael, KD2, MPW. I'll throw out the call one more time, Michael, KD2, MPW. Perhaps something happened. We'll try him again on the next rotation. Next up is Eric, KE2EJ. Okay, I'll try it one more time. Eric, KE2EJ, are you out there?
guys. It's not even 11 p.m. Okay, next on the list is Andy, WA2CDL. Are you out there, Andy? Please, be out there.
Yes, yes, I'm here. Hi, good evening, everyone. WA2CDL here. And all I can say is an excerpt from what Dick says during the TechNet is, wow. There's not really much more that I can add because everything that I wanted to say was already said by everyone else. So I got to come up with something that would continue this conversation as it's been so great, you know, since it started at 9 o'clock, and here we are 2 hours into it. I just want to say that, you know, thanks to John, and really, thank you, John, whoever you're listening right now, you made me lose a lot of sleep. And of course, that was also mentioned just in the past hour or so. And what I mean by that, basically, is, you know, John had a unique way with explaining things. And he was, in my opinion, he was the radio magnet. And what I mean by magnet is, if you weren't listening to his conversation that he was going through, whoever he was talking to, and he just happened to tune in to this frequency, Limark, because he would mostly spend his time here on this frequency, on the repeater. He just happened to be scanning with a scanner or just tuning in, and you would stop and just listen for 10 seconds or less. You would be glued. It's like watching a movie, in my opinion. And you would want to see...
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
And I'm listening to myself in case I time out. Let me get the beep. Okay. So you would be glued to the radio because of the conversation that would be happening and the way John would be explaining things in detail. So you would want to know who John would be talking to and, you know, how much deeper the conversation would get. So that was the unique thing about John, is that he was very generous, extremely generous in his knowledge. He would not hold anything back, and he would go into these subjects really on a deep level, and it would just hold my attention. So I remember staying up at night with an HT on my bed, laying down my pillow with the HT next to me, listening to John talk to Wesley, or John talk to Dick, or John talk to someone about some of the things that he's done and the experiments and his work environment and, you know, all the things that he's done over the years. And it was fascinating. He was a real wealth of knowledge. So that's what I'll really miss about John. One of the things, anyway, that he was very giving, very generous, and very open and patient, as previously mentioned. That's all I basically have to say, because everything else was said. How much more can I add to a guy who is so unique in his way at this doing this this special net? I'm sure a lot more things are going to be said. I do have to go, though, because I have an early meeting tomorrow and I can't stay up all night. I wish I could, but I have to be up early because I have a meeting, so I'm going to have...
Repeater, timeout.
I heard repeater timeout. Stand by. Okay. Yeah, I have to go because I can't stay up because I do have to get some sleep. And I've been getting up early for one reason or another, and I got to get up early.